So, what if, for those of you that are planning to go to Debbie's house to the picnic today, what if after worship, instead of going to Debbie's house, we were to go to your house or your room or your hotel room, wherever you are? What if we went over and walked in unannounced? Would there be any clutter around? Please do not come and walk into mine. Even when I've cleaned up, there's plenty of clutter, both seen and unseen. Don't look under the beds. I think this is pretty common because decluttering seems to be all over the media these days as a big theme. I guess most of us have a lot of stuff, and it seems like I accumulate more and not less. So how about you? I want you to take a minute and think about what you have bought this week. What stuff you have bought this week? Just go through your credit card bill in your mind. Well, some of it was probably consumable, food, reading matter, gas, pills, light bulbs, such things. And other stuff you'll have to store and care for, at least for a while, like maybe some new clothes or... And then there's other stuff that's never gonna go away, and you will end up leaving for your heirs to dispose of. And no matter how much those things might mean to you, you will have no control over what happens to it. Or perhaps what you've acquired was more in the unseen stuff variety, like pension funds that got added to, or an increase in the value of your stock this year. And if so, maybe you're wondering what to do about it. Maybe reinvest it to make more, or give it away in a way that you can leverage for tax benefits. Or maybe you're thinking about estate planning and rewriting your will. However you plan, or not, there's one thing that's for sure. And all the lessons we just heard tell us that in no uncertain terms, you can't take it with you. And because you can't, good planning is a gift to your heirs, because no one, including someone as wise as Jesus, wants to get sucked into arguments over how to divide inheritance. These arguments and bad feelings tear up families for generations and can really destroy relationships. Attachment to stuff can mess up relationships while you're alive, too. Think of the gifts that people calculate in terms of not so much as a gift, but it's a gift exchange, in the sense that people feel they need to balance the value. One bride once complained that some people's wedding gifts to her didn't cover the cost of their meal at the wedding reception. Think of the bad feelings that's generated between neighbors when one breaks a tool that they've loaned to another. And consider that Shakespearean admonition, neither a borrower nor a lender be. As wise words that are trying to be proactive about the possibility of damaging relationships. St. Augustine once said, God gave us people to love and things to use. And sin, he said, is the confusion of those two things. Stuff can work against our relationships with others and our relationship with God. In the Bible story, possessions have certainly destroyed the relationship between the brothers, whose problem with dividing the inheritance is what prompts Jesus' little parable story. In the story he tells, a farmer has had a stupendous harvest, far more than he can use, and he has to decide what he's going to do about it. And instead of thanking God, or even factoring God into the equation, he consults only himself. "Self," he says, "what shall I do with this good fortune?" He doesn't even think to ask God for help with making this decision. He doesn't ask how it might be shared or used for the good of the world. He doesn't even ask what it might mean in his own life and legacy. He's just going to eat, drink, and be merry. We too often have a wall of separation between our stuff and our relationship with God. And when you build that wall thick and high, you end up siding with that teacher that we heard in the book of Ecclesiastes. "I turned and gave my heart up to despair, because sometimes one who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave all to be enjoyed by another who did not toil for it. What do mortals get from all the toil and strain with which they toil under the sun? Even at night, their minds do not rest." Stuff can lead to asking, what's the point? When you realize that you can't take it with you. The point can only be seen when you ask God, "God, why did you bless me with this?" And that's what the farmer in the story failed to ask. His attitude is sometimes called practical atheism. Practical atheists believe in God as a concept, but they don't see what difference that belief should make in the practical matters of their lives. And it's only a small step from there, possessing our possessions, to having our possessions possess us, which you probably read about in the extreme in hoarding. Which of your possessions, if you lost them, would leave you feeling like your life was incomplete? Your phone? An event or entertainment subscription? A regular dinner out? Consumable stuff can also possess us just as much as the stuff that Amazon delivers. And credit cards have made it even more easy for our possessions to possess us. The old song about debt says, "St. Peter, don't you call, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store." You can tell St. Peter not to call, but you can't stop him, as people discovered in Dayton and in El Paso. You can't stop that call any more than the farmer in Jesus' story could. You may not own your soul. In fact, you don't. It was bought and paid for by Jesus, whether you acquiesced or not. But you may not own it, but you can sublease it, whether you're going to let it be subleased to altruistic values or to the various deadly sins, including greed. And greed is an addiction. It's addictive because it tells us that we never have enough, can never stop acquiring. acquiring, you never have enough. Subleasing your soul to the greed addiction allows greed to just take over your life. As Jesus tells that crowd that was listening, continue to be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Continually. He warns us that we always need to be aware of the temptation of this evil power of greed in our lives. There's never a point where the greedy person has enough. Greed can never be satisfied. It's always looking to get more. So, what can we addicted people do? Here's a test to apply to yourself often. A greedy person, if you're trying to decide, a greedy person will ask him or herself, what's best for me? A faithful person asks God what's best in this situation. Jesus tells us that the antidote to greed is to be rich toward God. So how do we become rich toward God? Well, if the root of greed is fear, the fear of not having enough, then what is it that we're afraid of? Fear that it all depends on us. And what's the opposite of fearing that it all depends on us? The opposite of that is trust. Knowing that we've been provided for by the Father, it seems ungracious to doubt that our needs are going to be met without our having to cling onto every morsel. God tells us that the cure for greed is gratitude and generosity. So, I invite you into recovery by resolving each day to do two things. First, name in gratitude a person that God has given you to love. May not be someone that loves you back, but name in gratitude a person that God has given you to love. And then second, to discern each day a way that you can give up something in order to live with less. What's something you can let go of today? It might be a gift directly to that person you thought of, a gift that builds relationship. It might be something given up to make the world a better place, a giving that honors God or honors those who come after you, consciously or unconsciously. Even if the people for whom you give it never know, your recovery from greed addiction is in thinking of others and not yourself. For you to be rich toward God, said the writer of Colossians, you have to have your mind set on things that are above. You live in a new self, a self clothed with Christ. The things that are important and support your physical life are wondrous blessings from God and are things for which we are thankful and with which we can be generous. They are important, but they are temporal, and you can't take them with you. The only gifts you can take with you into eternity are faith, hope, and love. You take your relationships, and by ditching greed, you nurture those. Love. God's love for us, our love for others, love never fails. And for that, we can say, thanks be to God. Amen.